This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Her Vantage on Resource Center, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. On this show, you get to listen to successful women in the world of work, in business, in the civil service, in NGOs, in academia. Professor Dr. Farida Shah, Professor of Molecular Biology. She's somebody who traverses many of these different categories. She's an entrepreneur. She is with international and national NGOs, a fellow of the Academy of Science for Developing Countries, vice president for the Organization of Women in Science of Developing Countries. She has worked at the state level setting up biotechnology initiatives. She's so many things. Her doctoral degree is in molecular biology from the University of New South Wales, Australia. She's the founder of two businesses, Novel Plants and of FS Natural Story, the manufacturer of health food supplements and skincare products. Wow, that's a long list. Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, you have talked about how the genders need to partner up in the science arena for the development of the country. How important is a similar partnership for the genders in the business world?
I think it's important for the business because women need to be able to contribute towards the economics of the country. And in my case, I think my interest is how to get women in technopreneurship, which is a very new area. And if you look around the world, there's very few women that's involved in either translating research to business technopreneurship or heading a technology-based company. So there are very different aspects to it. And this certainly needs to be looked into.
What do you think are the challenges that continue to prevent women from becoming technopreneurs?
The challenges are age old, where setting up businesses, going out to get an equal living are all like men's domain.
Still.
So now with more and more women, and women have shown that they make better CEOs or if not equally as good in heading the company, research has shown that when women head the company, the productivity has increased. So I think every country, every economy needs to look how to engage women in as many areas of businesses, whether it's technopreneur or ordinary entrepreneurial, because these are important resources that needs to be engaged.
Well, there is no denying that. What do you envision as this partnership that will help the development of the country?
I think from my perspective, the genders have been working together in a partnership in the entrepreneurship. The only issue is that the women are at lower rank. So now the issue is we want to make sure how do women get to the top positions? Heads of companies, CEO of companies, financial controllers, board of directors. So this is what we should be aiming for.
What should be done to get women there then?
In Malaysia, efforts have been made to try and get women into directorship positions. But I think that is not the only way. I think it needs to be inculcated at an earlier level, whether it's at the university or people in science, of how to engage them to be into technopreneurship. And then, because it's not an overnight thing, isn't it? It's a business acumen has to be acquired over the years. You can't make a director or you can't make a head of company overnight. People have to go into a stepwise or rank-wise to get and learn from your senior to get to the top. So I think that there must be there's a move now to look at how to inculcate and get women interested in entrepreneurial, and in my case, we're talking about technopreneurial, to get them involved from young.
To inculcate, do we need to have formalized processes? Do we need to have formalized institutions to engage women so that they become entrepreneurs, technopreneurs?
I personally believe that if you have an institute or an academy, I think what we need for women to be in entrepreneurs, to be technopreneurs, is to have an enabling environment. We talk about how do we get women to from mid-career to the top level, and we talk about the leaky pipeline because women at some stage have to make a decision. Your household, parental management, children management. So we need to provide an enabling environment. In this case, maybe providing crèche daycare center, at workplaces. More importantly, if the woman is in a position where sometimes work can be done at home, then she should be given the opportunity. In fact, men too should be given the opportunity if they need to be at home. Because in this day and age, we talk about deliverables. You can work from anywhere around the world as long as the job gets done.
Do all these things need to be formalized so that we have, you know, daycare centers at work? We can have flexible time. So do these need to be put down in a document, put down as public policies so that the environment is created?
Yes, I think it's better. It should be done. For example, one of my colleagues that I met in a province in Italy, the local council themselves provide a 12-hour daycare so women don't have to rush back to pick up their children at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock. So I was quite amazed that these things, because they want to get women involved, and women can go away feeling quite comfortable. But we are lucky in Asia because we can get nannies quite easily. We got daycare, we get our extended family. But still, a crash and a daycare at work keeps a woman very comfortable, you know, that if they need to see anything happen. I think this is one area that Malaysia could look into, because we've been talking about this crash for the last 15 years or so, not many companies. I think government can do some incentives that will motivate companies to set up daycare that will help women. And in terms of flexi time, we need to look at the ethos of working. Are we ready? Are women ready? But I think women who want to really keep their job, they will deliver and they will do the best. As we know, women always deliver. and there are many evidence to that.
When I hear statements like this, though, it seems to suggest that, okay, women always deliver, men don't always.
No, I don't say that, because I think in this world, we're not talking about who's better than others.
Okay.
It's a world issue now with sustainable development and the Millennium Development Goal and increasing the economic power of a country. Engaging the 50% is important because women are just as good. What we're talking is that women have not been given the opportunity to show that they can do it. They're not given the opportunity to get to the top. And more importantly, I would say, some women themselves are not confident of their capabilities.
Now, as somebody who wears so many hats, and as a consequence, you are involved in many different kinds of organizations, do you see issues about women in the sciences, women in the world of work? Are the issues similar?
Yes, some issues are overarching, because we talk about the most important is we talk about the work-life balance. How do we get, if we need a pool of women to get to the top, we need a bigger pool to move up the ladder. So we talk about this leaky pipeline that halfway during mid-career, whether in science, after a while they have to drop out when they have children, in an entrepreneur in business, when they have to take care of the children, then they make a decision. So the pool gets reduced. So we need to look at how do we increase this pool of mid-career women, the good ones, to enable them to stay in their work to get to the top. And some issues are the same. Most important, I talk about this invisible glass ceiling.
It is still there.
Yes. And the network. A lot of women don't realize the power of networking, you see, whether it's women and women and women and men and your men. But women are at disadvantage because men still have, from my experience and my colleagues, have a affinity for their fellow men. If you think of, even though they know you, they know a group of people, but when it comes to suggestions and who do you name to be in a leadership or a committee, they will always very often nominate their fellow friends first. What you call this old boys network, it happens in science, it happens in the Academy of Science, it happens on board of directorships. There are quite a lot of women out there. So what I think we really need is to have a database, full, transparent database where the credentials of women are there. I don't like it when I hear that, no, why do we need a quota for women? No, we're not talking about quota. We are talking about having a database of women with good credential, but giving them the opportunity to be there.
Professor Dr. Farida Shah, owner-founder of FS Natural Story and also of Novel Plants. Coming up, commercializing research and creating a sustainable business. This is Her Vantage on Resource Center, BFM 89.9, the business station.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Her Vantage on Resource Center, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, speaking with a woman who wears many hats, Professor Dr. Farida Shah, who is a university lecturer. She's a fellow on international organizations and also a businesswoman. You own two businesses. I assume that these businesses stemmed from the fact that you did a lot of these kinds of research.
To be honest, I started off as a pure basic science researcher. I'm a professor and I wasn't interested in administration or anything but my research in oil palm, genetic engineering of oil palm. Then I had an opportunity to go to Malacca to set up the business of biotechnology. And that, because I wanted a new challenge, I took it. And the chief minister's vision then is the same as mine. So it opened my eyes to the lot of potential that we could have from all the research in the universities. How do we take some of them into commercialization? So it's not easy. But the way I looked at it, I divided into a short-term, long-term, mid-term, and long-term. And some things that I see that's been done at the university for so many years that haven't been commercialized. For example, these herbal products, herbal plants, and tissue culture. So we set up very quickly the pilot scale, because we look at how do we produce plants for the agricultural needs. I was surprised when we were importing banana plantlets. So I said, why do we have to? So that's how I strategize. When we commercialize, it must solve the problem of the nation. In this case, we need plant material. So why do we have to import? We talk about herbal plants. We've got 3,500 species. So why don't we develop in tissue culture instead of people going to the forest to pilferage? That was my basis. And if you look at the herbal plants, when I was at university, I was in molecular biology. I see a lot of my colleagues looking at phytochemistry, looking at all the benefits, the antioxidants. So very quickly, I employed a chemist and the relevant people to screen all this, because I wanted to start looking at young and entrepreneur. Right from the day one, we formed several companies under the state government. Then we gave first option to the researchers to be part of the company.
Academics are not known for their business acumen. So where did you gather yours from?
Well, I guess I was lucky because my father is in business for the last 50 years. My sister's in business. My husband is in business. Different sizes. So I guess I've been involved and I know what it takes. Up to a point when I wanted to be a scientist, I had no interest. I didn't think about being in business. But when the shift and the emphasis globally of how do you look at translating your research into some worthwhile product that's benefit, then it opened my mind at some stage in my life that, okay, I become a professor. So let's look at how we can look at commercialization of research.
I mean, in fact, there are bodies set up to help universities commercialize on their research. What are the challenges there?
Well, it's gone a long way. To be honest with you, I set up Novel Plants, Sundaram Bharat, like a technology base. When I did some research and found the oil palm, the universities were not set up. How to patent it or how to register it, this way back in 2000. So that's why I find that we didn't have the regulation of planting genetic GMOs. So that's why I thought, okay, I need to move away and find new challenges for me. But now every university have a commercialization unit. It's improved a lot. The university will help the researcher to patent it or trademark or whatever you want. But the point is, a lot of this is my personal opinion, because after I left the university and went back, I find that some of the professors, I'm sorry to all the professors out there, they are still in the same place. Some of them don't even realize that what they have has a potential. We are not saying that scientists have to be business people. we need to create sensitivity and awareness that the scientists need to be aware of intellectual property. If you can commercialize, who are the owners? And if you are interested to commercialize, you have to be part of it or go all the way, or you have to be involved to help move. Even a lot of people have the wrong impression that scientists do not know how to commercialize, but it's really not their job. There must be a body to stop this gap between the lab to the business. And it's a long jump. It's not that easy.
For instance, how long did it take you to get from, you know, the lab to the marketplace?
When I first went to Malacca, we didn't have a Malacca Biotech Corporation. I was just working in the chief minister's office. So I decided, no, this is not the way to go. So we founded Malacca Biotech Corporation, Malacca Biotech Holding, the commercial arm. And for technology, you need to have some relevant platforms. So that's why the Malacca Institute of Biotech came about. And in 3 years, 8 months, I set up all this entity. The institute from the ground was empty. So we set up the building because I did it selectively to see which platform we need. The molecular biology, the phytochemistry for analyzing the herbal tissue culture and bacterial, and to screen very quickly the biochemistry. So we set up all this lab for the platform. At the same time, I set up 3 pilot plants for the herbal for extraction and analyzing the oils and just a crude extract and the tissue culture, which I knew about all this when I was at university from my colleague. So I selected what we required: bananas, 4 types of bananas, horticulture, some ornamental plants. But it's easy because we did a lot of research to see what's already in the public domain, you know. Mm. So we're not reinventing the wheel. It's already there. It's setting it up at a pilot scale.
At the end of the day, it took about 3 years, 8 months
to set up all these things. And when we exit, we formed the company the second year of setting up. Because my strategy was setting up the whole value chain under one roof. So that by the time the 2 companies exit, I went to make my pitch to get the funding, and we offered the young people. So one of our chemists, he became the CEO of his company, which is actually flourishing very well till today, 5 years later. So I think it's how you strategize. It's my opinion. We cannot do everything, but we need to look at what's been stuck at the university level that need to be scaled up, that needs to be go into a prototype development, that needs to go into a pilot scale, and then to commercialize. It's a long journey from the bench to business.
Now, you have 2 businesses yourself. In a way, they're kind of related, aren't they?
Now, novel plants is more what I call it, a technology base. I have 3 technology within that company that I wish to commercialize. One is being registered by UKM from my oil palm research. And the 2 is from when I started in Malacca. We set up, like I said, several companies. And novel plant was one where we look at having a database of all the herbal plants in the country. And that's why novel plant is actually owner of technology. After I decided to retire, so to speak, from any organizations, I decided, okay, what can I do with my time? We have all this information that I have done where it looks we have a lot. All plants have antioxidants. And people don't realize that antioxidants are different groups of compounds, each having different roles. And I selected 2 products or 3 plants to start with where I know the work has been done in the lab. So my company wants to look at developing and manufacturing products that have been shown scientifically.
You have this company called FS Natural Story. It provides drinks, skincare products. What are the challenges there now that you know you've reached back into your molecular biology? Yeah. Now you've gone to market. What are your challenges?
A lot of people think, oh, why do you want to set up a business? I say, no. I think it's something of how knowledge can be translated. It's a dream. Hopefully the dream will come true. I'm involved with it with my nephew, who's a graphic designer. He's an architect. So all our labels and branding all controlled by him. It's a very new company. to build an what you call Malaysian type of body shop, you know?
Uh-huh.
Four lines. How is different from body shop? Because
what are the challenges?
The challenges, there are a lot. It's a different type of challenge and people don't realize. Even so, all my products are done by contract manufacturing. I have health supplements. So the challenge is how to get it registered quickly in time with the Ministry of Health. And I have got a company that does the tea, our herbal tea, and the aromatherapy. So the challenge is all the way is to resource for the raw material. I now know from the time at the lab until commercialization, what are the challenges? Because every work, every project, there's a challenge. Most importantly, I find with our herbal, is the lack of raw material. The lack of standard operating procedures where from farm to the table, we need to inculcate or sensitize the farmers that, look, we don't need any pesticide, we don't need... So we still have a long way to go. Although the Ministry of Agriculture is involved in this herbal development and they're doing quite a good job trying to get pockets of people, the registration of products, the importation and the time taken to register, and the investment capital. I can see how a young people would have problems because just to register a company, we talk about 3,000. Just to register one capsule requires money. So
the capital investment is quite
high. These are some challenges.
To become successful, what do you think you need?
I think that to become successful, first and foremost, you must have the passion. You must want to make your dreams a reality. You must have a good team. I mean, at my age now, I want to like to have a young, dynamic people. But you must have an ability to manage and be resourceful to manage this project that require so many different resources to look at the prices of boxes or bottles. I've not gone into my beverage yet.
Professor Dr. Farida Shah, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you, Soon, for having me here.
This is Her Vantage and Resource Center, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.